The prophet went up to the mountain to pray. He'd been without food for 3 days, and an angel descended from
the heavens. You are on a starship journeying through space. There's a neural jellyfish sucking on your face. It projects into your mind sensations of space and time, because the journey that you're on is very, very long.
The prophet bowed before the angel.
Everyone you've ever met and is also on this ship in suspended animation with their own jellyfish. The thing that you call death, it's really not that strange. It's just the moment when you do a jellyfish exchange. Jellyfish exchange is just a jellyfish exchange. A way to entertain your brain when you are a jellyfish exchange. A way to entertain your brain, you are in deep space.
That was Jellyfish Exchange by Blair Davis, Tamsin Hanley, Leroy French, Gary Timone, and of course, Sanders Camley. Together, they make the Old Town Country Jugbound Space Gospel Life Orchestra, and you can find them at the Old Town Jugbound Life Band Space Orchestra Assemblage.org. I like you, and I want you to like me. And today's guest, Nora McInerney. She's a spokesperson for Healthy Grief with a wonderful podcast called Terrible. Thanks for asking. And also some awesome books. Most recently, It's Okay to Laugh, Crying is Cool Too, which you should read. We're going to jump right into this podcast. But first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH has been supported by ZipRecruiter, and they want you to know, according to the latest research, 90% of employers plan to make enhancing the employee experience a top priority in 2022. After all, a happy workplace is key to attracting and keeping great employees. Isn't that wonderful? You know things are changing when the number one recruitment service in the world, ZipRecruiter, is putting that in an ad. Employees have been quitting. They're not human sponges. You can't squeeze their life energy out of them like you're some kind of cemetery lich sucking the life juice out of some unfortunate who got lost in your graveyard. This is the future, friends. And in this beautiful era, employees get treated with respect. And ZipRecruiter is going to help you find some great employees because it uses a powerful technology to find and match the right candidates up with your job. Then it proactively presents these candidates to you. You can review these recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply for your job, which encourages them to apply faster. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the U.S. based on G2 ratings. ZipRecruiter's technology is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Find the right employee for your workspace with ZipRecruiter. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Duncan. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And we are back. Friends, I got some dates to announce. I'm going back out on the road. And if you are in Tacoma, Washington, March 10th, 11th, or 12th, come see me at the Tacoma Comedy Club. March 31st, I'm going to be in Portland at the Helium Comedy Club. I'm headed back to Austin, April 15th and April 16th. May 12th through the 14th, I'm going to be in Phoenix at Copper Blues Live. And there's more dates coming down the line, including the Denver Comedy Works. Keep your eyes peeled. If you're at any of those places and want to come watch some stand-up, go to DuncanTrussell.com. The ticket links are all there. Also, if you would like to join a hive of sentient wizards and sorceresses, head over to patreon.com/DTFH and sign up for the DTFH Patreon. You can join us generally twice a week for our meditation, our family gathering. We make things together. We are on the precipice of publishing our book of erotic cryptid short stories. You'll be able to buy that on Amazon. And if you join our tribe, then you can participate in the next book that we are going to create together. That's patreon.com/DTFH. And now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family our podcast, the unforgettable Nora McInerney. Nora, welcome to the DTFH. Thank you so much for being here.
It is a pleasure to be here.
I thought we could kick it off with me asking if you could describe to me the difference between clean pain and dirty pain.
Oh, I have discovered after writing that first book, It's Okay to Laugh, Crying is Cool Too,
yeah,
where I talk about that topic, that really the person who explained it to me had gotten it from, you know, probably a psychology book or something else that they had read, but I was just not in the space to take on any information, right?
Right.
And so I thought he was just explaining it to me and it was his own concept. And I have not read her book, but I think it's in one of the Brené Brown books that she goes into that much deeper than I ever could. But the way that this concept was explained to me was in truly the weeks after my husband Aaron died, and I was having lunch with an old coworker, and he could tell, though we did not know each other that intimately, that I was unwell, not in just the way that, you know, any person would be after they watch their husband die slowly in front of them, but that I was just so bogged down. And what had happened in those weeks after Aaron died was then I just started to question everything. Like, had I been a good wife? Had I made the right medical decisions with and for him?
Yeah.
And this coworker looked at me and said, you know, clean pain is the pain of what happened, right? It's the pain of losing Aaron in this example, of losing a job, of losing, you know, your safety, your security, whatever that initial pain is. And dirty pain is when we sort of rub dirt in it, right? It's the pushing of the bruise. It's sort of twisting the kaleidoscope to see, like, well, maybe this is my fault.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I could just ruminate on this and make it worse somehow.
Yeah.
And that interaction was, you know, impactful enough that I wrote about it in my first book, but is really, I think, something that I have struggled with as a naturally anxious person, as a person who wants really badly to be good and to be liked, and a person who, you know, has not developed, or until her late 30s, really clinging on at 39 here, like any sense of self-compassion and the fact that, you know, we do the best we can with what we have in the moment, and that it's okay to forgive yourself for very, very human mistakes.
Right. Are you cultivating this self-compassion? It's gotten better, right?
It's gotten better. Okay. I'm still working on it. I had an interaction with a therapist who I started seeing 2 years ago, who in one of our first sessions said to me, it doesn't appear to me that you have a lot of self-compassion. And I was like, yeah, do I? Why would I? Like, have you met me? Come on. You know, I'm a person who thought that engineering majors were learning how to drive trains until she was in her 20s. So, does that sound like a person who deserves compassion? Does it? Alan, the name of my therapist. Yeah, it's something that I have absolutely had to learn and had to cultivate and still am working on.
Why is it so hard? Why is, of all the things, being compassionate to yourself something that is so difficult? I think about it all the time. In Buddhism, it's the first thing. It's before any of the other bullshit. How are you going to be compassionate to other people if you can't be compassionate to the thing you're closest to on the planet?
Yeah.
And so, but what's your theory on that? Why would it be so hard for us to be compassionate to ourselves or to love ourselves.
I've dabbled, right? I've dabbled in Buddhism. I've got every book Pema Chodron has ever read right over there. Just over my shoulder. And every time I read a single word of hers, or even better, listen to her on audio.
The best. My favorite. I just finished, what was her book? Oh my God. The one on the Lo Zhang saying. Yes, anyway, yes, I love her voice. Yes. I love her voice.
And I love that, you know, some of these recordings are from the 80s where she's just speaking to a group of people.
Yeah.
And she's speaking in complete paragraphs. And they just turned it into an audiobook because they could, and it needed basically no editing. And every time I listen to her, I think, huh, where's that been all my life?
Yes.
Where has that been all my life? And I was raised Catholic, and we, in Christianity, we do learn to love other people. And I do think as an adult, I was told, oh, like God loves you too. As a kid, I don't know if that ever got to me. I don't know if that messaging ever really sunk in to me. It was more, you know, a lot of thinking about the things that I had done wrong and how could I ask forgiveness for them? And I remember this interaction with a religious leader when we were in middle school at, did you ever go to youth group? Were you raised in a...
Here and there. I was raised Episcopalian, and we did have youth groups.
Yes, Episcopalian. So, you know, it's like similar to Catholicism, but like it's the Diet Coke to Coke, you know?
Exactly. It's light. So similar. It's Catholic.
It's light. It's
lighter. You can get divorced.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So much freedom. And so youth group was it was just such an intoxicating environment, right? Because you're young, you're around other adolescents, which is invigorating. And maybe some of them even went to different schools. So they're like fresh and new and you don't really know each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're in a basement with a couple stinky plaid couches. Maybe they're going to order some Domino's later.
Yeah.
You don't know. There might be some Mountain Dew in the situation.
Yeah.
And I remember being told that to God, all sins are the same. So he is looking down at a checkerboard. So it doesn't matter if you got kinged or not, all sins are the same to God. And I remember being like, man, oh man. So me being like mean to my brother, same as a murder.
Good to know.
You know, just being like, oh, all the same. Wow. So, you know, being rude to a person, you know, disrespecting my parents, all the same in God's eyes, all he sees is your dirty little sins.
Right.
And I don't know why that stuck with me. I actually just sort of remember that in the process of, you know, writing my next book. And I also, I don't want to blame it all on organized religion. I think when you're trying to figure out why you believe the things you believe or why you are the way you are, we are just this unknowable recipe. Who knows what got tapped in there at what point, what got swirled into our beliefs and made us think and feel the way that we do. But I am also a person who was, you know, my drug of choice growing up was perfectionism and performance.
Yeah.
And you also strike me as a kid who might have gotten pulled into like a gifted and talented program.
Yeah, until I met my parents thought I was actually disabled, and then they got me an IQ test and I did great, and then they immediately put me in like one of these advanced programs and I was immediately kicked out because I had behavior issues.
Yeah, and I had ADHD this whole time and I had no idea. I just thought everybody's brain was like chaotic and like, oh, no, I'm already on to the next thing. I've got this other idea. And I have to blurt it out right now because I just have to. You have to know this thing.
Yes.
But I was, you know, sort of shunted into a gifted and talented program, really, really got all of my love and validation from performing, right?
Okay.
From doing a good job at things. And so any sort of chip to that armor feels like a failure or feels, you know, like an aberration. It just, if you are what you do and what you do is imperfect or wrong or hurts another person, well then, you know, you're a piece of crap away. It is a fickle gas. It really is the sort of validation of other people.
We got a great new sponsor, friends. Trade Coffee. Did you know that 90% of coffee from the grocery store is actually stale? You heard it right, 90%. You've been drinking old, stale bean juice if you've been drinking coffee that you bought at a grocery store. Instead of rebuying the same old, let Trade Coffee send you something freshly roasted that you're literally guaranteed to love. Trade sells the freshest roasted and ethically sourced beans from America's best independent roasters. They ship free to you as often as you like, whole or ground. Whether you're a coffee nerd or just want a better daily cup, Trade's real coffee experts taste test over 400 roasts and use technology to match you to your ideal coffee based on your preferences and brewing method. Take the coffee quiz to get started. Trade Coffee guarantees you'll love your first bag or they'll replace it for free. Trade has been featured by the New York Times, Wired, GQ, and has delivered over 5 million bags of coffee. Their subscription is no hassle. Skip shipments, change your frequency, or you can cancel anytime you want. At least try their coffee quiz. It's really cool. I'm sort of a coffee illiterate, and just doing the coffee quiz actually helped me dial in what kind of coffee I like. And then, of course, they connected me to some kind of deep inner sanctum level coffee that I'd never heard of before that they sent to me. It's wonderful. For right now, Trade Coffee is offering a total of $20 off your first three bags. When you go to drinktrade.com/Duncan, that's more than 16 free cups of coffee. To get started, take their quiz at drinktrade.com/Duncan and start your journey to your perfect cup. That's drinktrade.com/Duncan for $20 off your first three bags. Thank you, Trade Coffee.
It is a fickle gas. It really is. The sort of validation of other people.
You know what I caught myself doing today? I caught myself looking at myself in the mirror with my shirt off and going, "You stupid fat fuck." And that was like, in autopilot. That's my autopilot. Like, I caught myself because of this Buddhism stuff. You know, I was like, holy shit. What are you doing insulting yourself to the mirror? And how often are you doing that and you're not catching it, you know? Just it's so deep to sort of, you know, in some forms of Christianity it there is this. I remember like weirdly getting off watching the Scarlet Letter they showed in school when the guy's whipping his back and being like, whoa, that's kind of awesome. But that is kind of tied in to Christianity, right? You know, the
Self-flagellation.
Yeah.
And we can do it in so many ways now. We don't have to whip ourselves with a chain or a piece of leather. Like, what we can do instead is we can, you know, look in the mirror and then compare ourselves and how we appear to how we think we should, or how someone else does. Or I can get on my phone and immediately destroy any love I have for myself or my life by just, you know, a few scrolls. And then all of a sudden I'm like, actually, I want to burn my house down. I'm going to burn my house down. That's what I'm going to do. Okay. Because I do not. And my kitchen counters are not like that. And they are not clean. And
is bullshit. I'm sorry to cut you off. But this is, to me, I feel like in the future, they're going to look back and be like, well, that's illegal now. Like, if you can't post your bullshit on social media unless it's real. You know, and like, you can't do that because you're just hurting. It's a weird form of attacking the world by posing as though you're doing great. And then, you know, my wife and I, we've been through rough times. We had to go to marriage counseling and we're much better. But, you know, sometimes a picture of us would show up on social media. We're so happy and people are like, dream couple. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't quite understand the full picture. It's, you know, it's debt and it's, I didn't mean to hurt anybody, but I think we need to figure out a way to balance it out somehow. So we're not tricking people into imagining that everything's great. Yeah.
And
that's kind of what your show's about, right?
Yeah, yeah. And part of it too is tricking ourselves too. And the reason that the show is called Terrible Thanks for Asking is because I was such a good liar. I was such a good liar, and most of us are, Duncan. Like,
yeah.
No matter what happened before this phone call, if you would, you know, if I asked you at the beginning, like, how are you? What would you have said?
Great.
Great. You're great. You're great. You're great. You're great. And it doesn't really matter. I'm going to move this. I don't know why the glare in my glasses is driving me absolutely bananas, and I can't hide my self view on this. And it's
if
just
you
making
click,
me...
I figured out how to do that. If
oh,
you click
did?
The,
okay, God bless.
If you click on my square in the upper right hand corner, it will expand the frame.
Perfect.
There
thank
we
you.
Go.
Thank and you. Thank
yes,
you. Thank
and
you.
And you won't have to be tormented. Like,
oh,
it's so distracting
face,
to have a body.
Hearing. Yes. It's like when I have to do a video call like this, I am immediately reminded of, have you ever FaceTimed like a toddler or a little kid? Like,
yeah.
They are just like just drawn into this, their own image.
Yeah.
Like narcissists. They're ready to fall yeah. into the screen. They
yes.
love it. They love it. Like my kid used to like basically like French the phone to get to his own face. Just so excited to see himself.
Same.
And that's what I become. I'm just, but yeah, you would have said you were fine. If I asked, you would
yeah.
have said you were fine no matter what. And I mean, you know, there's a reason for that, right? We all belong in participate in a social contract where, like, you know, the checkout person at Target does not get paid to hear the truth about your marriage, you know?
Right.
like
right.
when they ask, you are allowed to lie to them. You are allowed to be like, pretty good. Thanks for asking.
So weird. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But we do it to everyone. Like, we do it to everyone, or at least I did. And I did that after Aaron died, and Aaron died after my dad died, and my dad died 5 days after I had a miscarriage. And it was just, I wanted to be fine for other people. And
yeah.
I also wanted to be fine for myself because I didn't want anyone to pity me or feel bad for me
right.
or feel like they needed to take care of me. And I also thought, if I can just fake it, someday I will have maked it. And I will be like, I will be the genius who figures out how not to actually be sad. That's what I will accomplish. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And
you know, wow. Yeah. Please continue. So.
Yeah. Oh, I failed. And I would get messages from other widows or people who were going through hard things saying like, I wish I was doing better. I wish I was doing like you're doing, like, how I was doing off screen, right?
Yeah.
Off Instagram, off of, you know, a blog or Facebook or whatever, outside of interactions at a brunch with friends was so poorly. And I had gotten thousands of emails after Aaron died. We wrote his obituary and we revealed his identity as Spider-Man, and that obituary went viral. And I got so many messages from people who were going through or had been through something really, really hard, who
yeah.
were just spilling their guts to me, a complete stranger on the internet, Duncan, a complete stranger,
yeah.
because the people around them had stopped asking, or maybe never asked, or maybe they just didn't feel like they could be honest with the people around
yeah.
them. And I started to feel like, what do I do with this? What do I do with this? And that is literally how the podcast started, was me wishing that I would have said to everybody at the funeral, I'm terrible. Thanks for asking.
Amazing. And that I love it. I love what the title of one of your books is, The Hot Young Widows Club.
Yeah.
Having experienced my own loss in life, I realized, oh, this is like a club or a secret society or something where I'm one of the people who no longer can live in a world where I'm immortal and the people around me are immortal and everything just keeps going and everything's fine. I now am one of the people who's, you know, weird glass bubble of delusion and fantasy that I built around me has just been smashed by a meteor. And we all
yeah.
get together and we talk because we know, holy fuck, it goes bad fast. It goes bad fast. Like, you can't, within 2 days, you know, you're suddenly like in one
yeah.
phone call and you're at the hospital with your husband. The way that you're able to write about this for people who are in the club is just so cathartic and so like it's so healing. But suddenly there you are. You know, yeah. When I got testicular cancer, I was suddenly in the hospital after like having done a brain scan, because maybe it's in your brain, but we don't know yet, but we're going to have to scan. Yeah. You'll hear in a few days. But I remember calling someone I was dating and being like, are you cool dating someone with cancer? Because you're trying to make it make sense. But yeah, it's a secret society. It's a club. And you have become a spokesperson, someone who's like the...
Jump on in. The water's fine.
Yeah.
For just 4 easy payments of horrible pain and agony and moments of light, you too could join this club. And the price is high. The price of admission is high. It is non-negotiable.
Oh, my God.
And the benefits are very few. But everybody joins it eventually. And
what are the benefits?
I mean, occasionally, and you only get to play it, you know, once or twice, sometimes more. You can play that card, right? You can just be like, kaboom.
Oh my
right?
God.
Like,
yeah, bam. You can.
Like, you know, Erin never wanted to play the card. And at one point in time, we had this dog and she was so shaggy and she had gotten into like, you know, there'd been a thaw, like a winter, an early winter thaw. And she was out in the yard just getting just disgusting. And we didn't have a bathtub. We could not bathe this dog. I tried to get her in for like a grooming appointment. They didn't have anything. I was like, yeah, the thing is like, her dad has cancer. And we did get an appointment, Duncan. And Erin was like,
oh, yeah.
You said, I was like, we had to. Okay, this dog needed.
You deserved it.
We deserved it.
You deserved it.
If that's the only benefit we get, that's the benefit we get. Okay, I will cash that card in.
I got to tell you, we're in such a backwards ass society there should actually be fucking cards. I mean, we've got handicap parking, right? And I get that, obviously. Yeah. But what about the other, like all the people who are, you're passing in the grocery store and maybe you're thinking to yourself, what, that guy looks like he's in a bad fucking mood. You don't know what just happened to that person. And you have no idea why they're like that. And so we need these cards in real life. We need, these people deserve to get to the front of the line. Are you still there? You froze up. There we go. Well, exactly. See, that's what happens. Not just in podcasts, but in actual reality. And
yeah,
I you know, isn't aside from the grief card or cancer card, isn't one of the benefits that you actually are living in the truth all of a sudden? Not in some rosy way, but isn't that a benefit that you're living in the real world versus whatever you thought it was?
And that you're living so presently, which is, you know, even when the present is terrible, it's still the best place to be. And I found this almost sort of, I never know if it's prescient. Is that the way to pronounce the word? You probably shouldn't pronounce words that you don't know how to say. But
I do it all the time.
So I found this piece of writing. For some reason today, I was like, today is a day where, you know, we're speaking at 11 a.m. my time, which is like, you know, what am I going to do something before 11 a.m. if I have to stop by 11 a.m.? No. I mean, it just makes everything before then just not usable time for some reason for me mentally. So I decided I had to clean out my Google Drive. Why? It's like unlimited storage, but you know, get in there. And I found this writing that I had done when I met Erin and before, truly weeks before he had a seizure. And it's all about how the present moment is the best place to be, even if it's difficult, as if some part of me knew that something was coming, which of course I didn't. Not in a million years could I have guessed that, you know, that I would be getting a phone call at work, that Erin had a seizure, and that we would be at the hospital and being told that he had a brain tumor, and still like crossing our fingers that, you know, it's no big deal. People have brain tumors all the time. It could be anything. And then finding out he had brain cancer. And in this essay that I had written, I'm saying, you know, oh, I'm the most present that I've ever been. And I've been present for things that I never noticed before. And love can do that for you, right? Like joy can do that for you. And so can grief. So can sorrow. It's most of our lives are truly forgettable. Like, what did you have for lunch 2 days ago?
No idea.
Like, what were you doing at 11:48 yesterday?
No idea. I mean, I could probably dig it up, but it would take time.
It would take time. You'd be like, oh, I guess, maybe I was just sort of standing in the kitchen trying to debate if I should have another cup of coffee or move into lunch. I don't know. It's most of life is just so mundane, and that's wonderful. Like that is, it really is. It really is. But when you're in either of those sort of heightened states, either in, you know, at a very high, high or a low, low, you're so attuned to the ordinary that it feels extraordinary.
I want to thank Feels for supporting the DTFH. My loves, I slept like an angel last night thanks to Feels. Feels, it's premium CBD that will help to keep your head clear and feel your best. It's hassle-free, delivered directly to your door. CBD naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. There's no hangover or addiction. I love Feels. They have a new mint that I chomp at night and fall asleep as though the sweet baby Jesus had just kissed me on my sleeping button. They also have a wonderful liquid CBD. It's like something out of J.R.R. Tolkien, something that elves would drink. You just place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important. So Feels offers a free CBD hotline help guide your personal experience so that you find your perfect dose. Joining the Feels monthly membership makes your self-care easy. You'll save money on every order. You can pause or cancel at any time. Start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/family hour, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/family hour to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/family hour.
When you're in either of those sort of heightened states, either in, you know, at a very high, high or a low, low, you're so attuned to the ordinary that it feels extraordinary.
Yes. Well, I mean, when that's in your situation, you suddenly, there was this clock, you know, when you're someone you love has cancer, a clock just appears out of the horror, this fucking, and I'm reading your writing about it. I did the same thing with my mom. I would try to negotiate with it. I would imagine that I could talk to the cancer and be like, you know, do you really have to kill my mom? Like, isn't there a way to just sort of, you know, back off just a little bit? It is my mom, you know, and I am special and so is she, you know, as opposed to all the other people dying of cancer out there.
All those other moms are like, my mom? Worth saving, worth skipping. I would skip this one as far as a host goes. You could latch on to literally anyone else.
Yeah.
Not this one.
This is a good mom. And and did you find yourself in this very strange imaginary conversation with that clock? And it's just, I mean, I know you write about this, but when I think about what you went through, it's just not okay. Like there, you know, like it's not okay. That's that series of events bundled into that time period.
I have a chihuahua barking in the background. It's like, haven't I been through enough? Okay. dog.
We have so much in common. I, too, had a chihuahua post my experience with these things. Always barking and barking, always barking.
Always
it's good.
Barking, and such a stereotype. I'm like, that's the mailman. And that's the mailman. He's doing his job. He's bringing you medication because you have a problem. Okay. And it's not just the barking. I can do anything. And yet, then the dog barks. And I'm like, now while I'm recording, must you? Yeah. It's, The things that break me will be like, and I just think about my grandfather surviving the depression, bringing 9 kids through it, making sure they were fed and clothed. And then, 2 generations later, I'm ready to cry because my right AirPod won't connect. And I'm sure my soft little hands that have never, fit a pipe in my life. And now I'm like, but it's so hard, Grandpa. But thank you for saying that, Duncan. I feel that way every time I meet anybody, anytime I hear anybody's story, I feel the exact same way. I'm like, oh no, 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 no. Yeah. And I have friends who, have already, their punch card should be filled.
Yeah.
It's absolutely indisputably unfair and not right that people have to go through any of this. We're talking like the day after Russia invades the Ukraine. And I'm thinking, seriously, this is how far we've come, is basically no far. And people are still willing to inflict massive amounts of pain on one another willingly in the name of what power? What? And it's also fleeting. And you want to just take these world leaders and sit them down like they're bad little boys and say, like, someday you will be dead and none of this will matter. Right? Like,
tomorrow. And that day's tomorrow. Because that's why, like, we have these guillotines in the room that we sat you down like little boys. Because we're going to cut your heads off and everything will get better right away. Because this is what we used to do to people like you. Sorry, that's a part of me. I don't want to decapitate the world leaders. I don't really mean
that. We don't want to, but it's like, and I'm not trying to like minimize it. It's like, you want to shake people who don't get it and be like, don't you understand? Don't you understand? We are here for a moment, for like an absolute blip. And it just like, what are you doing any of this for? And by the way, I want to shake myself for all the times, because obviously going through my Google Drive, do you think I was reminded of just my best moments? No, the worst moments too are all archived. Like all the times that I was petty or jealous or just downright unhinged are also there. And I want to shake my former self and say, just shut up.
Right.
Like, who cares? Be here. You're fine.
Right. You're here. And, but tell me a little bit, I mean, your concept of what here is, what the present moment really is. I know you have I think you have tattooed on your wrist.
I do. But,
may I see it? I read about this.
I think this is the first tattoo I got that wasn't like horrible. Oh God. How can I?
Oh, I can't see it through Riverside. It's too blurry. I see. Okay, cool. Yeah.
And it's also like at a point in my arm. It's at a point in my arm. Yeah. I hadn't owned a watch yet. So I got it like right where a watch would hit. It's just, it doesn't really make sense. Yeah. But also I think I was afraid my dad would be mad and he would have been. And he couldn't know. He couldn't know that his 28-year-old daughter got a tattoo underage. You know, just who would do such a thing?
Who would get a tattoo?
Who do it? I always sort of misunderstood mindfulness as, something I just have to do for 10 minutes a day and I can set an app and tick it off and great, I did it. And what a discovery to find through Pema Chodron.
Oh no, I lost you again.
And that's why the topic of today's episode is why podcasts should be recorded on cassette tapes mailed back and forth. And
I love that idea. For those of you out there, what's happening is we've got a little bit of a connectivity issue, but I think that's great because we're talking about impermanence and we're talking about the reality of, not being able to
control anything.
It could draw anything. And to get back to the question I asked, if you have, and I'm sorry, I've tried to define it, and it's hard for me, but how do you define the present moment?
Oh, I mean, wherever my feet are. And that is hard for me because I really, really, really do love to sort of like tiptoe back into the past and play with things, see what I could have done or said differently. I love to sort of peek into the future and just decide if I could try on a new worry, wear it in a little bit, break it in so that when and if that moment arrives, I'm prepared. I've already imagined it. And what I have realized from that first moment that Aaron was diagnosed, I did exactly that. I remember just going into my brain right to his funeral, right to the very worst case scenario. And I can tell you that that thought exercise prepared me not at all, not one bit, not one single bit for not even for the funeral, not for the 3 years that we would have together. And all it really did was take me out of one of the moments that we had together, which was the night we got engaged, was the night he was diagnosed. And I spent, you know, it might have only been 2 minutes or 5 minutes, but I spent any amount of minutes just imagining a future that was completely out of my control.
Yes.
As if it was somehow helping.
Right. Well, it's a dream. I mean, I would think that maybe I could control the future by having like fantasies of a future where my mom wasn't going to die of cancer.
Yeah.
Definitely didn't work.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of interesting parallels. My wife's name is Erin.
Mm.
When I, at some point, I don't know why, I decided to start volunteering at a hospice. And I wasn't ready really for what I was doing. I didn't even know. It was hubris that got me in it more than anything. But I remember the first home visit I did, it was a couple and her husband had brain cancer that had, you know, sort of spread in all through his head and out of his head. And he'd been setting things on fire accidentally, forgetting to turn the oven off and stuff. And I remember there were rabbits and they had rabbits and she's crying. Who will take care of the rabbits? And I'm standing there just like in the midst of someone else's nightmare, completely not prepared. And then he comes out of the room and has the most beautiful smile. And he goes, "Hi, how are you?" And I'm like, "I'm okay. How are you?" And he's like, "Ah."
Hard to say.
You know, I remember the ambulance took him to the hospice. And I remember the way he waved and seeing that present moment in him. He was glowing with the present moment, fully in the moment, as wretched as it was, still emanating this field that, you know, I've seen in like people like Ram Dass and stuff, but also in dying people, this thing that seems to challenge all this projections people like me put on it. Like, this is wretched, a nightmare, horror, when they're like, this is my life. And,
You know, and don't just see me as this part of it, you know?
Yes.
And it's so easy. Somebody just becomes the way they died. And like, was your mom cancer?
No.
If I asked you about your mom, would you say, not cancer? No.
No. No, but it does overshadow, you know, going through those, for me, it was 4 years, for you, 3 years, of a shadow, of some kind of shadow. At least that's my own personal experience.
Yep.
3 years of being in the shadow of this imminent death. I don't know if I'll ever be better after that. I'm fine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As in the sense of like, I'm not like, I don't think the world's an evil place or anything like that, but I don't know
you'll never be that version of yourself. And we're not meant to be, you know, we're not sort of these immutable figures who, you know, have these experiences just sort of glance off of them, right? We are not impervious. Like, we are meant to be transformed by things. And so, no, you won't be the same Duncan. You'll be this version of Duncan who did sit with his mom while she was sick and did stay present for those, you know, horrible moments. And I think about that often. I think about that often. That a person is, of course, more than the worst thing that happened to them or the way that they died. And also, you're not going to be unaffected by it. We watched when Aaron was sick. I'd never seen Dexter. And it had concluded by that time, I'm pretty sure. Like, it was, or there were at least 5 seasons. And I remember just being on the edge of my seat for the first season. He was like, there are more seasons, so he will make it through. It's not a spoiler. He's absolutely not going to die or get caught in the first 3 episodes. And I was like, ooh, I don't know though. How will he get out of this pickle? He's really done it now. And there's this season, I couldn't tell you where it is, where he describes, you know, his sociopathy or his, you know, his needing to be a murderer, that as a dark passenger, right? And I remember relating so much to that. I remember relating so much to prison shows like Locked Up. I remember relating to The Walking Dead, to anything where things are out of the protagonist's control. And there's just this sort of dark, menacing presence. And still, what do they want? To live, right? In the face of a zombie apocalypse where, you know, even your closest family members are turned into monsters who want to eat you alive, the characters in The Walking Dead still want to be here. They still want to be on this earth. And I watched so many things like that.
Oh my God, you're blowing my mind, because that was like, I really got into The Walking Dead, the comics.
Yes.
And I never made the connection. Of course. It's like, because especially the comics are like, they're
amazing.
Not,
it's like, I hate to be one of those people, but it's true. It's like when people are like, I love the show. I'm like, well, have you read the comics?
Read the comics, like, because it makes this show look like Mr. Rogers.
Truly.
Compared to the comics.
Truly.
Because no one that I'm aware of up until that point had really, you know, you see a zombie movie, there's almost a kind of fun to shooting the zombies and all my family's dead, whatever. But The Walking Dead was like, oh no, everyone's gonna go crazy, people are gonna be crushed by the collapse of the world as they knew it. It's about grief. Locked Up, bro. Oh, we got so into Locked Up too. I don't watch it anymore.
I was so into it. Yeah, now I don't want to watch anything with even like a hint of suspense or darkness to it. We watched Yellow Jackets recently, and I had to talk through the whole thing. I had to talk through the entire freaking thing and be like, oh, I had that sweater vest.
Right. That was pretty that Yellow Jackets is pretty fucked up. That world that we used to live in, is it a bad world? Is that world a silly world or something? Versus the world that we're in now, subjectively, obviously we're all sharing the same world. But when I look back to before I had cancer and before my mom died and my dad died, and I kind of see someone who is really a little like insensitive and sort of not the best person. Not what I would consider to be the best person.
Yeah. And I don't think everyone in that world is like that. I do think some people need the bottom to fall out for them to realize, and to become realized. And I was always a very sensitive, you know, person. I would have, if I'd known the word empathetic, I probably would have said that, but I was always very, very attuned to the suffering of people around me. I think, you know, when you're raised by an alcoholic, you're sort of raised to take the temperature of a room and want to regulate it, which is something you only learn in adulthood and not childhood. And, you know, that, so I can see all of these patterns and behaviors that I was only shaken out of by those losses. And I don't miss that version of myself. I don't miss the before version. of myself. I really don't, but I do have more compassion for her because she didn't know what she didn't know. And she was doing her best. But like before my dad died, one of my best friends from growing up, his dad died. And I was in my late 20s and I was like, wow, that's really sad, man. I've known this guy since I was a kid and oh, my friend's dad is dead now. And I went to the funeral and I sent him a card. Maybe I dropped off a hot dish and then I never brought his dad up again. Never, 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 never. I wouldn't even bring up my dad in front of him. Like I just pretended dads weren't a thing around him. So I never even gave him space to not be okay. Never gave him the opportunity to be honest with me. And I did not even realize that until the minute my dad died. And he was the first person I wanted to call to say, I can't believe you've lived like this for 5 years. How? How have you lived like this for 5 years? How? And he was like, wait, what's happening? I was like, oh, my dad just died. But no, 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 we'll talk about that later. Tell me about your dad. How you feeling? Like, just you just don't know. You don't know until you know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I know I get the whole, you know, you were doing your best and all that. And I some part of me is for, you know, doesn't feel guilty, but not all of me. I do see it almost as it's something that's helped me believe in reincarnation because, you know, as above, so below. It's almost like that was a different life altogether with a whole different set of conditions that many of them were, I thought were permanent, you know, and now this is a new life. And also because, you know, of my age and just the way the world is, sometimes I feel like I'm just in some kind of dream and that, you know, Pema Chodron's teacher, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who's my meditation teacher's teacher, said, when you get old enough, your people just are dropping like flies. You know what I mean? Like,
and that.
So I know in store for me is more of the same.
Yes, you know. Yes. And doesn't it make you want to look at the surviving elderly people you know and think and ask like, how are you? How are you doing this? How? How are you living without your best friends and your siblings and your parents? Like, just. I just have so I want to like go back in time and like hold my grandma through those losses, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think that our culture is like illiterate when it comes to grief?
Oh, absolutely. It's like, look at, I tell everybody who has a job, like, you know, go look at your benefits because, when I was employed when my dad died and when Aaron died and you're entitled to, I think, 3 days of bereavement leave.
Unreal.
So, you know, not great. And that's if you are a full-time, you know, salaried employee with benefits. Maybe you'll have a manager who will, you know, tell you, like, don't worry about it. Come back when you're ready. But, like, do they really mean when you're ready? Or do they mean a couple weeks? Right? A couple weeks.
They mean a couple weeks. We're going to be ready in a couple weeks. We don't have 3 weeks.
We don't have 3 weeks.
I got to hire someone in three weeks.
Got to
get shit taken care of.
Yeah. And so we don't. And because, you know, and also like we're so removed from like the actual deaths themselves. If you were you with your parents when they died?
No, I was not. Both of them. Yeah. I missed the moment of death. I was there. Almost. I missed the moment of death. One of the many things I feel guilty about.
Don't, because honestly, our dad waited till we left the room, you know, and that was like, I feel like it was an intentional exit and Aaron made everyone else leave the house. Like I just knew he would not go until everybody left the house and it was just us. And now I'm going to cry, but it's like, it is so beautiful. And like, it doesn't feel like a disappearance. It really doesn't. Like it has made me believe in something more too, because like it does feel like this transition. It feels like all of a sudden you understand everything about the universe and it is a brief and sparkling moment.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have to go back to the Home Depot parking lot and you're like, motherfuck, that's not how you park. Like you're over the line. Like, you're over the line.
Okay. Yeah.
But for a minute there, like you got it and you knew, yeah. like you knew what matters. Like, you know why wars are stupid. You know why it's dumb to, you know, hold a grudge against your coworker for, you right. know, CCing your boss on an email. Like, you get it. You get it for at least a minute, maybe yeah. longer. And I think that's what mindfulness is. I think that's what being present is like just having that sense of like, oh, I get it. I get it. Like, humans are silly, sweet, adorable little creatures, aren't we? Like, just
yeah.
waking up, putting on our little outfits, worrying our little worries, like going to our little jobs,
yeah.
like, you know, collecting our little things and, yeah, parking over the line and like
at Home Depot. Are you aware of how many people need shit in here?
No one's here because they want to be. No one's here because they want to be. No one here is impulse shopping.
No one goes to Home Depot unless there's a disaster. You're making me remember something that I've forgotten. That's weirdly easy to forget. Which is that magical quality to it, and which is that weird new spatiality or something. This new expanded universe, and a impossible sense that this person is somehow more available to you than they were when they were embodied. Yeah. And then now you have, this is why it's good to have, you know, some kind of widow's club or grief club or some people to talk to, because if you talk to the normies and you're like, you know, I know this is going to sound wild, but I feel like I can kind of still communicate with my mom.
Yeah.
Here and there. They'll be like, I know you can. And isn't that wonderful? You're grieving. You'll have in about 5 days, you should come back to work though, because Roger got COVID.
That PowerPoint is awaiting for yeah. your input. Yes.
Yeah.
We have comments.
Did you have dreams, experiences, anything like that where you connected with Aaron?
Yeah. So I was just telling my mom, who's actually here visiting, so maybe she can nice. Overhear this, but right after my dad died, maybe even the night that he died, it was clear that Aaron was dying. It was clear to all of us. And I had this dream. We were up at a cabin. We don't own a cabin, but we were up at one. It made sense. Our whole family was together, and our dad was in a screened-in porch doing a crossword puzzle, which is absolutely socially accurate. He would do a crossword puzzle at the dinner table with us, like separate from the conversation, look up, deliver a remark that showed he was listening and judging us, and then go back to it. And he was out on the porch and none of us could get his attention. And we were so excited to see him. You know, we're like, oh, dad came, dad's up at the cabin. Like, you know, dad's not dead. This is great. We found him. None of us can get him to look up. And Aaron stands up and he opens the door. And he can get the door open. And my dad looks up and he sits down next to him. And I knew in the dream what it meant. And I knew that it would be okay. Like, I knew like my dad like went first on purpose.
Right.
Because he had not been sick as long. And I woke up just feeling like, I'm going to be okay. Because I remember when my dad got sick, I was like, oh no, but my dad's supposed to be here. You know, like yeah. Aaron's going to die, but like, they'll have my dad. And
yeah,
that dream like brought me such peace. I feel like that dream got me through the next few weeks. And I very rarely get to actually see Aaron in my dreams, but he'll be like there. Like yeah. I'll be at a party and people will be like, there he is. Like, oh, I was just talking to him. He told me the funniest story. And I'm like having fun, but trying to get to him. And we're just like missing each other.
Yeah.
And I had one dream where he showed up and I actually got to talk to him, and he just showed up at my front door and it was so normal. I'm like, oh, hey, come on in. And we're catching up and we're so excited to see each other. And I realized, oh no, dude, I got married. Like, I'm married to this guy. We have all these kids. Like, oh God, like, what are we going to do? And he was like, oh, not a big deal. Not a big deal. He's like, we can all work it out. So it's good to know that my dead husband wants to be in a throuple with me in the next life, because I just had to that moment in the dream, I was like, oh shit, dude, I didn't know you were coming back. And he was like, I get it. I get it. How could you know? But do you have dreams of your mom? Do you get to see your parents in your dreams?
Yeah, I've had a few. The best one was my dad, who, he liked to live like by the water, and my dad also, I believe, I couldn't tell if you meant your dad is Vietnamese or your dad went to Vietnam.
Went to Vietnam.
So mine too. Also, to cope with the PTSD, became an alcoholic, you know, struggled with a lot of vets, you know, that's, they don't, especially
and they were
back
so
then,
young. They were so young. My dad was 17 when he went. His dad too signed young. A permission slip to join a war.
Yeah. Too young. And it really, we're like the ripples of all the wars. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're all living in, the ripples of some epigenetic, horrible trauma. That's it. Anyway, the dream, so my dad, like, he was really proud of this one apartment he had that looked out over a harbor. So in the dream, and my dad too negged me, like your dad negged you, out of like some kind of love, I guess. Yeah. But really, it's
best
like, well,
we could do.
Thanks for me. Do I have an eating disorder now? I don't know, maybe, but you know, the best you could do.
Yeah. Okay, why were they so obsessed with bodies? It's so weird. Like my dad would like fat shame my brothers too. It was so weird. I was like, they just have like regular bodies. Like, they're literally fine.
Oh, I know.
Bizarre.
You're drinking. You get to that point, and it's time to fat shame your kids. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? What are you doing? Well, you have kids now. Imagine looking at one of your children being like, holy shit, you are putting on weight. What's going on there, chubby? Like, can you imagine being like someone's parent, aggressively fat shaming them?
Oh yeah, it was a weird time. Any younger listeners, it was a weird time. It was a weird time.
Love your body. What?
No, punish it. Hate it.
No, punish it. Yeah. No, he let me get on when I'm like, I think I was 14, and he let me get on SlimFast. Like, I'm a 14-year-old taking SlimFast because I was so ashamed of my body because of his. So I'm like drinking. I'm hungry all the time. My digestion's fucked up. I'm like gassy and like not losing any weight, by the way.
Like, proud of you, son.
No, he made fun of me for the SlimFast. What are you? What are you like in your 50s? Your 50s, your housewife trying to lose some weight? It's like, motherfucker, what do you want? But I still will always love him. And the dream, he was sort of showing, like, proud of this apartment looking over the ocean. Really, I mean, oceanfront view, incredible. And he's like happy. I'm dang it. One thing I've learned from reading your books is that it's not okay to cry.
Yeah, no, stuff it down. Your feelings are so gross. Stop having them.
That's what I really appreciate in your writing is the invitation to not feel pain. But he, anyway, he was like, he was basically telling me he's okay. And then he goes, oh yeah. And two of your friends, they're in the apartment above me. And I'm sure what they are. They're weird. I think they might be aliens. And then, you know, in the way dreams do, it's these two Tibetan monks are standing like on either side of him with their hands like on his shoulder. Oh, it was the coolest, like, whoa, who are you two?
Yeah.
But the sense of like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, you're being taken wherever this is or whatever this is.
Yeah.
Something is helping you through it. Yeah. You know, which is,
you're okay.
Yeah.
Do
you think it, not, I don't even know if it matters. It does matter, but most people I know who have a meditation practice or they seem not like confident or have, it's not like they have faith that there is some continuation of the soul or consciousness. It's like they're fully like, well, you can still talk to them. They're immediately accessible. They're somehow outside of time or something. What do you think? Is it just some kind of, you know, subconscious wish, the denial of death, all that cynical shit? Or do you think our loved ones stick around for a while after they drop their bodies?
I think they stick around. I do think they stick around. I don't think it's denial at all. I really do think that the soul, like whatever makes you you, is so special. And maybe that is just some like latent Catholicism, but you know, that's the fingerprint of who you are. That's the thing that can't be duplicated, because it turns out a lot of people have the same fingerprints. Okay. But they're actually not that unique. So
what?
Yeah, I might have, I think I just like saw part of a TikTok about it, but that's the new, I saw a tweet, which is the new, like, oh, I read something. I used to say I read something and I meant I read like a tweet with like a link. I didn't quite click the link. Now I mean, I glanced at a TikTok about it.
Yes, yeah, sure. This is what I do. Yes.
I'm like, well, what I've heard a 14-year-old say is that, like, you know, that's the part. That's who we are. You know, it's not just, you know, the wiring of our brains and our bodies. Like, there is something else. And you know that, because if you've seen a dead body, you look at it and you're like, well, looks a lot like my dad.
Yeah.
That's not my dad.
Not my dad.
Not my dad anymore. So I do think that. I do think that.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't think it's too. Like some special third location anymore. You know, I don't think like, you know, you get sort of like sucked up into like a heaven that is a different location. I've got a theory that like, this is the bad place. Like, we are in hell right now. What could be worse? What could be worse than this world that we live in? Right. And that these moments of joy that we feel, these moments of peace, these moments of mindfulness are like respites. Those are glimpses into what heaven could be. Like, of who we could be. And when you are dead, you are just in that constantly. You are in that state of peace, in that state of connectedness to everything. And, you know, like when you're having like a lucid dream, or when you're, you know, like really deep in a meditation, or where you're just really, really happy in a moment and present, and you're doing something that's seemingly meaningless, but feels so meaningful because you're out of your brain. That's how, like, you know, I feel, or sometimes I recognize Aaron in like hawks. There's so many hawks. Okay. There are so many hawks around there, but I'm like, oh, there he is, just dropping into a little hawk body so he can drive next to our car or circle around us on a hike, or for some reason, like perch in a tree in our backyard, you know. And everybody who has a dead loved one, it has this same sense, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Like, oh wait, like somehow my dad's here, right? Like somehow, like, you know, my mom's here. Like this cardinal, always birds. We love birds in this. this. Like, but it's I do think that. I think we stick around. And I think we're sort of surrounded at all times by, you know, the souls and the energy of people that we know and that we don't too.
I want to go back a little bit to what you said about the possibility that this is hell. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think of something my meditation teacher David told me. There's Buddhas in all the realms, in the heavenly realms, in the earth plane, and in the hell realms. There's beings that are in the hell realms who are just there to serve others, to try, even in hell, compassion still exists. And that's what, if we are in hell, that's what you would be, wouldn't you? You are someone who is really helping people by being fully open about what happened to you, and also letting people chat with you about it in a way that doesn't feel, you make us feel so comfortable. How is it that I feel okay talking with you about your, like, the people you have lost? You know, sometimes other people are grieving. I'm afraid to talk about it. I don't know what to say. But you create this wonderful space for folks. And so I think that makes you, if this is hell, that would make you some kind of hell Buddha, which is pretty fucking cool.
That's honestly probably the best compliment I've ever gotten. I was trying to think of a better compliment. I don't think I've gotten one.
Awesome.
That's
hell
pretty
Buddha.
Special. Love being a hell Buddha. I was, as soon yes. as you said that, I was like, I got to find me a hell Buddha. I got to find me one. And you know, like, I think that's really beautiful. I'm going to go look into that more. I want to learn more about that.
May I ask one last question?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How is it being married, having a family, and being in this sort of throuple situation?
Yeah.
And how does your husband, how does he work with it? Because, you know, it yeah. seems like I would, if I were, I think I would, you know, we can't control the way we feel.
Yeah,
I feel like bubbling up out of me would be a weird form of jealousy for someone who's no longer here. Does that happen at all? Probably your husband is like,
no, it doesn't. That's the funny thing is I assumed that would be the reality. And the bummer is that is the reality for a lot of widows. It really is. And it's not just with their new partners, but with like their their dead husband or dead partner's like family, right? Like,
yeah,
where they're just shut out. Or it's like, I think right. it's just this very, we have a limited amount of imagination emotionally for anything, not just for, you know, the sad things, Duncan, but like for love too. And I did too. I remember growing up and being like, you know, my parents were like in love for 40 years. And, you know, I didn't know anyone with divorced parents. When I met somebody who like had a stepmom, I was like, ugh.
Wow,
like,
ew, yeah.
how could you even like let another woman into your home when wow. you have a mom? Like, I just like, love was possession, right? And it was yeah. loyalty, and it was like, ugh, and you only get this much of it. And that's certainly how I treated people that I dated too, right? Like, we'd break up and I never liked him anyways. He sucks. He can freaking go to heck. I don't yeah. care. Just this so like bizarre and toxic. And so I am lucky to have a Matthew because it's not like that. And I've asked him too. And he's like, no, I don't feel jealous. I'm not excited to be dead. Which is one of my favorite jokes. My most popular TikTok was, you know, questions people ask me, like, you're widowed, you're remarried. Isn't your husband jealous? Yeah. He can't wait to be dead. He'd rather be dead than married to me. And, you know, I'm like,
that's a dumb question. I'm sorry. I just, you know why we ask no, it? Because no, I have grieving friends. Sorry. Yes. I have grieving yeah. friends who mm-hmm. do have significant others, and they do have yeah. to, like, sometimes the significant mm-hmm. others are like, what about me?
I know. Isn't it so sad? And it's like all this insecurity. And I don't know if Matthew's just more secure because, you know, he went through a divorce, which is like a whole different kind of loss. And he's just very like secure in who he is. But it's not a dumb question because actually a lot of people do feel that way. And feel like sort of like threatened by the memory of another person. But to me, I feel like it's an asset. I even think it's an asset that Matthew is divorced, that he knows what it's like to be in a relationship and have right. to like let it go, even though it was the only thing he'd ever known. And they had yeah. children, you know, like, I think we learn so much from that. And to me, I would have gladly dated or married another widow because I would look at that person and think, okay, like, you know what it's like to live up to that vow that you made. And, yeah. and so I don't know, unfortunately I am lucky. And I really shouldn't be. Like, this is the kind of love that everybody deserves. And no, he doesn't yes. get weird about it. And like, I do get weird about it. Like, Taylor Swift was a huge part of my relationship to Aaron, unironically. And she was not yeah. cool in 2010 when we met. She wasn't. This is when people were like, oh my God, so corny. Ugh. Like, Speak yep. Now had come out. She hadn't quite made that like pop crossover. Aaron really saw her as, you know, the songwriter of our generation. He told me she's the Paul McCartney of our generation. Like, people wow. are going to respect her. And I was like, I fully agree. I already do. I am on board. So she comes out with folklore, and one of the songs is Cardigan. Erin always wore cardigans. Like, obviously she wrote that song about him, and it came out, you know, like, I can't even remember when it came out, but it came out and it felt significant. And I remember listening to that album, sobbing, and like, just, you know, Matthew just laid there and like let me cry and listened and was like, wow, this is the music that does it for you, huh?
Like, wow.
And he likes different kinds of music. And, you know, yesterday my mom and Erin's mom and Matthew's mom all went out to lunch together. And
wow.
Like, so it's that love, like Matthew's love is humbling, but the love that Erin's parents have for all of our kids is truly, I think, like the best example of like how to be, you know. And like, Erin's parents are like everyone's grandma and grandpa, and like they made 529 accounts for Matthew's oldest kids, like who have no blood relationship to them. You know what I mean? Like they're everybody's grandparents. And to me, like we could have so easily lost that and we didn't. And Erin's mom to me is like the best example of like how to be a person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause she lost her only son. And she is still so, so open and loving to the world around her. And I try to be more like her.
I gotta say, obviously I have no idea. You deserve it. You think you don't deserve it? You deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Come on. You deserve it. And I'm so happy you have it. And it makes me, my heart fill with joy to know. And I know everyone is like, oh, who heard you say that? Like, you got, it's okay.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah.
You deserve this. It's time for you to have that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And if anyone is listening and plays music in Phoenix, he's a drummer and he's desperate for a band. And so please, if you play any kind of music in Phoenix, Arizona, my husband is a drummer and he's very good. And I say that as a person who doesn't know anything about drums, but believes him to be the best drummer in the world. Okay. He's like, I'm really not. I'm like, yeah, you were in Blink 182. You are Travis Barker. Okay.
Wow. Friends, did you hear that? You must immediately bring this person into your band. Whoever's listening, please. You just heard this incredible conversation. And thank you for it. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. And for all of our technical difficulties. It's just been lovely. You're such a lovely person.
You are too. And I'm really grateful for all the work that you do. Can you tell folks how they can find you? I know your podcast, Terrible Thanks for Asking, but how can people connect to you?
So do you remember, you're my age. Like, you know, the era of the screen name. My screen name is Nora Borealis. So my website is noraborealis.com, not my real last name, but surprised people from college that it wasn't. And so is my Instagram handle. And, so those are the places to find me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Krishna, thank you so much.
You're so lovely.
That was Nora McInerney, everybody. All the links to find Nora are going to be at DuckAtTrussell.com, or you could go straight to the tap at noraborealis.com. Much thanks to our sponsors for supporting the DTFH. And I want to thank you for listening. I love you. And I will see you next week with two episodes. Until then, Hare Krishna.